podcast has returned. Welcome to number two. I'm Brian Fisher for CBSSports.com, along with the namesake, Bruce Feldman, the senior college football writer for CBSSports.com. And he joins us from New York, where he will be on the Tony Barnhart Show on Wednesday at 8 Eastern on CBS Sports Network, several other shows during the week. And Bruce, how's the weather out in the Big Apple?
Brian, it's shockingly pleasant for mid-October, early October. It's quite honestly, it's very similar to what we have in Los Angeles. So I'm thankful for that and excited about going off to Oregon this weekend for the ASU game.
Big primetime matchup on Saturday. Obviously, Arizona State comes in with a little momentum. I mean, they played Utah and the defense stepped up in that game. Three straight turnovers at one point. What's your kind of initial read on how this game is going to go for both teams?
Well, you know, got to give credit to Dennis Erickson and his staff because they have had a ton of injuries on both sides of the ball, and they played, you know, they played very well. The issue for them still is the penalties. They still make too many penalties. I think Brock Osweiler, who has been pretty sharp. I mean, he's had some shaky moments this year, but I think he's been pretty sharp. You know, now he's going to go into a very hostile environment. Autzen Stadium is by far the loudest place on the road that he's going to play this year. And, you know, they're going to need to establish some kind of running game, and their backs have been banged up. I think the other thing is, you know, when you see Oregon's tempo, you know, that's going to stress the defense, and it challenges the focus. You know, obviously we don't know exactly the status of Michael James. It was a pretty gruesome injury that looked like he sustained last week. You know, even if he can't go, the Ducks still have a ton of speed behind Darren Thomas. You know, Kenyon Barner is dangerous. We see DeAnthony Thomas is dangerous. But I think the pressure now really shifts to Thomas, the quarterback. Having watched the LSU game and having seen, you know, him last week against Cal, he has been very shaky as a passer. And I think that's a big question mark for the Ducks. I think a lot of people feel like if you force them to pass, they are digging out of a deep hole. And he's got to prove that he can consistently beat teams. He can do it, but there's no Jeff Mayo there. And I think, you know, finding a go-to guy has been a bit of a mystery right now for Chip Kelly.
We'll get to some of the upcoming week action a little later in the podcast. I wanted to ask you a quick question, though. Obviously, Ohio State, a crushing loss in the second half to Nebraska in one of the rare primetime games last week. Greg Doyle wrote a column on Ohio State saying that only Urban Meyer can come in and save them. Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football himself, weighed in saying that Ohio State season is over. I also wrote about the Buckeyes in my Surveying the Field column on Monday. I felt watching this game that as soon as Braxton Miller got hurt, it was like the coaching staff had no idea what to do. They didn't put Joe Bowserman in any good situation. It really seemed like from that point on, it was just a different Ohio State team.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, there's got to be a lot of frustration on the Buckeye fans' part with the play calling that they've had. I mean, the offensive line has had a lot of issues for them. And, you know, on the plus side, you know, Braxton Miller is expected to play against Illinois. He has emerged as a bright spot. You see some dynamic playmaking skills, which anybody's followed recruiting knew were there. You know, I think getting Boom Heron back is going to help them. But getting to the big picture stuff with the Buckeyes, because obviously, you know, they're in a spot where they haven't been in a long time in terms of, you know, losing games now and clearly not being a top 25 team at this point. You look at it and go, Luke Fickell was in a very tough situation. I think from the moment they lost at Miami, and probably even before that, quite frankly, he was going to have to, at worst, be about 12-1 to come through this. If Urban Meyer, former Ohio State assistant, a guy who has been on the record talking about how much he appreciation for the Ohio State coaching job and that program, if he's out there, you know, that's going to be a tough guy for the Ohio State brass to not go after, because the guy's won national championships. He has, you know, he not only has a plan, he knows how to put together a plan and he knows how to execute it. And after a year of broadcasting, and quite honestly, I think he's done a very good job as an analyst. But I think for so many guys, in the coaching business, they're so wired to the competition and to the grind, and I think it's going to be tough for him to turn down. So, you know, if they couldn't get him, I mean, Ohio State, still, there's a lot of other coaches, I think, who will look at this job. There's many guys who grew up in the area. There's some guys who worked at Ohio State before that I think would be very tempted. But Urban Meyer, to me, is destination 1, 2, and 3 if you're Ohio State looking at how do we get this thing turned around, no matter what the NCAA says. I think you have to go after Urban Meyer. And from what I heard, it's going to be very tempting for him to look at that job and to pass on it, because you just don't know when anything of that caliber, and there's very few jobs in his eyes that are of Ohio State's caliber.
There were several reports this week that it came out and said that Urban had made some contact with Penn State or vice versa, and that they were at least exploring the possibility of getting Urban Meyer to take over for Joe Paterno. Do you see that possibly happening? Is that another option for him, or are we still going to have to wait a few years before Joe Pa retires?
That would really surprise me if Urban Meyer were to come back to coaching for Penn State. Not because the Penn State program doesn't have a lot to offer, but, you know, there's one of the biggest cliches in sports is you don't want to replace a legend. And there are very few people in coaching who are as much a legend as Joe Paterno actually is. You know, to take over that job, I mean, I think there's a lot of elements of that where if you can't go in there and just kind of make do. I mean, you'd have to really overhaul the coaching staff and change a lot of things. I just don't see Urban Meyer, if he knows he can get Ohio State, to say, you know what, I'm going to go to Penn State. He had worked at Ohio State, and I know Ohio State will have some level of NCAA issues to deal with. But just the Joe Paterno shadow, I think, it is a lot, and it's going to be a lot for whoever replaces him, whenever that is. So I'm not disputing that Penn State may have reached out in some capacity to him. I'd be surprised if Urban Meyer was the one who had initiated. I just don't, that part would surprise me, and also surprise me if he would actually not just pursue it, but actually accept it.
Nittany Lions move into the top 25 this week. I think they're really not a top 25 team, mostly because of the quarterback issues they have. And it's interesting to look around college football and see Tennessee, obviously, with Tyler Bray getting hurt. He'll be out several weeks. They're having a hole at the quarterback spot. Florida has issues with quarterbacks because of injuries. You know, Texas is rotating guys in because they don't have a quarterback that has really taken the reins of that. You know, it seems like marquee programs around the country are having issues at the quarterback spot. Is there any explanation for that, or is it just kind of a few misses on recruiting?
I think it's really cyclical. You know, there's always going to be issues somewhere where some elite program has either just had a really good player go on, or, you know, some kid who is supposed to be a five-star guy kind of fizzled, or whatever happened. I think it's cyclical. You know, I really think that's the best explanation, because you look at it, there's a lot of elite quarterbacks out there, you know, but right now, for if it's a quirk or not, several of these guys, not to say all of them, because you still have like a Landry Jones at Oklahoma, you know, who was terrific this weekend against Texas, and there are guys. Michigan has, you know, a fantastic playmaking quarterback. He's not traditionally what, you know, what Michigan may have had, but Denard Robinson is an elite talent. So there are still guys like that at some of those programs. It's just, you look at it, Stanford has the best one. Baylor has a terrific one. I mean, you see it in places maybe that you wouldn't quite expect it. You know, obviously, you know, Boise has a terrific one. So some of that is I think a reflection maybe of kids who can get a chance to go do their own thing in a different scheme or maybe in a different environment, whereas, you know what, Robert Griffin knows if I go to Baylor, I'll still get seen, and I can still thrive in this kind of setting. You know, I mean, in the case of Kellen Moore, it's not like he had a ton of other options, but, you know, that's good evaluation, and it's a good fit. And I think ultimately, you know, one of the quarterbacks who I know was very highly recruited and it just hadn't worked out for Steve Spurrier is Steven Garcia. You know, I mean, this is a guy who was a big recruit, went there, and, you know, for a lot of reasons, it just has not worked out, and that happens. The recruiting process with quarterbacks is as is as hard to read as anything. I mean, I watched the Packers game last night, and just when you watch Aaron Rodgers throw the ball, I mean, it is just fantastic. The quick release, the way the ball jumps out of his hand. I mean, this guy has everything you're looking for, yet nobody offered him coming out of high school, and he had to go to the junior college route. So, you know, I think that speaks to the level of intrigue, at the very least, that you have with quarterbacks.
You mentioned South Carolina. They had a big win over Kentucky, set a bunch of school records for offense. The change, I guess, has been made with Connor Shaw taking over the reins at quarterback. Florida, obviously, they have their issues. Tennessee has their issues. Georgia seems to have reemerged, though, as the big SEC East favorite. If South Carolina stumbles again, obviously, I think it's all just a whoever's going to lose to the SEC West in the SEC championship game. But how do you see the rest of the season shaping up for South Carolina and for Georgia?
You know, I think with South Carolina, it's hard to get too much of a read on what they did against Kentucky, because Kentucky is just so bad, you know. And I mean, you have six first downs and six turnovers, and that's, you know, Stephen Garcia was the quarterback of the Gamecocks. They, you know, they would have won. They could have had Jerry Garcia as the quarterback of the Gamecocks. They would have won when Kentucky is that bad. But to me, it's going to come down to Georgia. Aaron Murray, I know he had a rough week a couple of weeks ago with some interceptions, but you see Isaiah Crowell, the impact he is making. I think finally you're seeing this 3-4 scheme has taken hold, and they have some good personnel fits, some of the younger players. I mean, this isn't a team that's actually much younger than it's not much older, I should say, than the Tennessee team they beat on the road. I think they started 10 guys who were freshmen or sophomores, and they still, you know, they've had some attrition, but I think they're only going to get better. I don't know what's going to happen when they go, you know, play Florida, because I think Florida is still a dangerous team, but it depends on how healthy Florida is at some key places, especially at quarterback. And as far as that, I mean, I guess I'm going to stick with an early pick that I had, that Georgia was going to come out of the SEC East, which I definitely wavered on because of the first two games, but their defense has settled in. My hunch is South Carolina is going to fall again. I just think that it's going to be hard for their quarterback play to improve that much more than what Garcia was giving them anyway.
A lot of eyes this past week on the State Fair in Texas. Big game against the in the Red River Shootout. Oklahoma just throttled Texas. A lot of it because of their defense. I know this is something that you wrote in the Big Picture on Sunday. I was very impressed just at the playmaking ability of that Sooners defense. And they really kind of came out and said, hey, everybody's talking about Alabama. Everybody's talking about LSU's defense. But you know what? We have a pretty good one as well.
Yeah, and their defensive line is making a ton of plays. Frank Alexander has emerged as one of the best defensive players in the country. Louisiana kid who's been living in people's backfields, and I think that's a big thing. You've seen, you know, with Travis Lewis, you know, not being 100% at the start of the year, Tom Wart is a guy who has blossomed at linebacker. And Tony Jefferson has had two amazing weeks in a row of just making plays and forcing turnovers. And I think that, you know, this was a game where it looked like Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator, said, you know what, we are going to go out there and play fast. We are going to just be a lot more aggressive than they are. And then it became a feeding frenzy. And I think that was important for Oklahoma to make that kind of statement, because coming out of, you know, surviving and beating Florida State on the road, where Landry Jones wasn't that sharp, and now all of a sudden you're looking at it and going, you know what, Florida State's not even a top 25 team, so that win is going to carry that much weight. Now, that's not to say Texas is going to be a top 15 team at the end of the year, but I think when you have the rest of the country watching, especially that noon game, it's the first thing people see, they're riveted to it. Make your statement. You know, we see it a lot with LSU because they played ranked teams. We've seen it with Alabama going into the Swamp and destroying Florida, going into Happy Valley and just smoking Penn State. So it was Oklahoma's turn, and I think they did what was important, especially coming off of Wisconsin handling and thumping Nebraska the way they did the week before.
One team that did not look too good on Saturday was Florida State. They had started the season with so much promise. I mean, top five in the country, put a lot into that Oklahoma game down in Tallahassee. Are they the most disappointing team in the country?
Yeah, I mean, I have. I'm going to write this later this week, and I mentioned this in my column yesterday on the site. Florida State is by far the biggest disappointment of the first half of the season. I mean, this is a team that was a preseason number six pick in the polls. And I had spent some time around Tallahassee in the off season, and Jimbo Fisher was not short selling this team. I mean, he was gushing about what he thought they had, not just from a personnel standpoint, but from a makeup, a maturity, and a focus standpoint. And yeah, they've had injuries, but you look at this and committing as many back-breaking penalties. They cannot run the football. They are near the bottom in the country in turnover margin. Things that you cannot have if you're going to be an elite team. And if you look at them, I was actually surprised they were still ranked going into the Wake Forest game, because you know they were 2-2, but their two wins were against nobody. They played Louisiana Monroe and Charleston Southern. So it wasn't like they had beaten, you know, even a decent team, you know, to show something. And I think right now at 2-3, you know, the expectations were so big on them. And you just look at it and go, this looks a lot like the same old Florida State, where there's a lot of high-profile guys, and they look good when you physically see them, but they're not producing. And, you know, to the credit to Clemson, because they're a program that feels a lot like Florida State in terms of they look the part, they recruit well, and they kind of end up shooting themselves in the foot. Well, they haven't, and FSU has this year. And, you know, you look at their schedule until the end of the season when they play at Florida, I'm not sure that there's going to be a win that they're going to have that anybody's going to even notice, because they're playing so many mediocre ACC teams in a row. And quite honestly, where Florida's at right now, I don't think, you know, Florida may not be ranked then either. I mean, this is definitely a big dud for Jimbo Fisher this year. And I think it's something where we're going to see how these guys respond. I mean, are they going to go out and run the table here after, you know, and finish out 9-3, or are they gonna keep stumbling along the way?
That's Bruce Feldman. I'm Brian Fisher, CBSSports.com. This is the Free Bruce Podcast. Going to bring in our guest in just a little bit. Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy will join us in just a few seconds. But I wanted to get your quick thoughts, Bruce, on one other game that I think flew under the radar nationally. It was a West Coast game against an average opponent in Colorado. But Stanford really came out and impressed me, especially Andrew Luck. I mean, he was sharp. He threw on the run very well, made some great plays, and I think everybody kind of overlooks Stanford, especially with how Wisconsin has come along, but they are a really good team on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I think you look at them and they're very workmanlike. I mean, Andrew Luck has been as advertised. He looks like an NFL player playing with college guys and against college guys. And they have a great group of tight ends. They're physical on defense. You know, the issue with them right now is the competition they have faced hasn't been anything for people to really get anybody's attention. And ultimately, you know, depending on what happens with Oregon, I mean, you know, Stanford needs Notre Dame to run the table till that game, because the Pac-10, Pac-12 just seems very watered down at this point. I mean, Utah has not been impressive. USC went on the road to ASU and just fell apart. ASU has a loss at a conference that, you know, just kind of probably deflated them a little bit. And I think with the way Oregon started out the year, getting handled the way they did by LSU, I think it's hard for Stanford and people to get nationally look at Stanford and go, you know what, we know Andrew Luck's a great player, we know this, but just around them, I mean, their schedule is tougher than Boise State's on a week-in and week-out basis, because I think the Pac-12 still has some good teams, but there aren't those elite teams at this point because Oregon struggled early and because USC is not where USC was 3 years ago. And I think that hurts them. You know, no question in my mind that Stanford's a very good team. I just think it's going to hurt them when we get this pecking order of, okay, where's the undefeated Big 12 champ, whether it's Oklahoma or Oklahoma State, or where, you know, what do we do with Wisconsin here? And I think Stanford is going to have less of a burden of proof then maybe some of those other undefeated teams will, if form holds true.
And you'll be out at Oregon and Arizona State on Saturday, but right now you're obviously in New York and taping several shows on CBS Sports Network. Wanted to bring in our guest now. Undefeated, 5-0, ranked in the top 10, Oklahoma State is in a familiar position. They've been in this spot at midseason a few times, but hung 54 points in the first half, I believe it was, and finished with 70 against Kansas. They're setting all kinds of offensive records, but great to bring in Mike Gundy. Bruce, I know you had something you wanted to ask him.
Mike, all of your offensive numbers are up from where they were at this point last year. After Dana Holgorsen leaves in the offseason, you hired Todd Monken to run your offense. What are the biggest adjustments that he's made scheme-wise?
We just made some adjustments based on our personnel. We are playing more wide receivers this year, so we're kind of set up to throw the ball a little bit more. And again, that can change if teams we play really want us to run the ball. They just have to take everybody out of the box, which we all know they can do that at any time. And then we wanted to try to get better on short yardage and goal line situations. And we have some formations and some plays that we added this year that we didn't use last year. And we're a long ways away from being good at them. We're just very average at them right now. But at least we have them in our system, and it's something that we hope that we can continue to build on to try to change this offense to fit what we think is best. But, you know, obviously last year was a great start for us, and we hope to learn a little bit more each season.
Mike, I wanted to ask you a quick question. Brandon Whedon, obviously, everybody kind of talks about his age. He was, you know, drafted by the Yankees, played professional baseball for a few years. He's 27 right now. How does that maturity show up both on the field and maybe in leading up to a game in terms of preparation?
Well, he's very mature, and he's married, and he's gone through that early 20s stage in his life as a male, and so it helps him in a lot of ways. But he has a good demeanor and approach to himself. And so whether he's doing really good or whether he's had a couple bad passes or a couple bad series, he handles it the way that he should. And I think that his leadership and that the players look to him for strength, and they see that everything's okay, and it provides great leadership for our team.
Everybody always talks about the kind of high-flying offense, but you have a little bit of an underrated running back in Joseph Randle. What he does in this offense and just how good he is that he's kind of overlooked by all the other weapons.
He's really a great fit for us because he's versatile. He's a good pass protector. He's very intelligent. We can split him out, and he can run pass routes. He catches the ball very well. And so when you tie all that together, he becomes a really good fit for us. He's ultra competitive and likes to be in the game, likes to play a lot. He's been durable and he's been tough.
Mike, your brother Cale is on Bob Stoops' staff at Oklahoma. Last year, you guys unveiled the diamond formation early in the year on offense. Then late in the year, the Sooners start doing it. Did you say anything to him about it, about stealing your guys' stuff at all?
Not a lot. Cale and I don't talk about schemes and different ways to move the football. You know, it was unusual last year. We had the diamond formation, and then when we played Oklahoma and the end of the regular season, they were using our formation. So it was kind of funny. And now I've noticed that the little college football that I do get to watch on the television, that formation has become very popular now. A lot of people are using it. You know, it's really just the wishbone turned the other way, which was very, very popular in the 70s and early 80s. So we don't talk a lot about schemes. College football is about personnel and matchups, and Oklahoma's matchups against Texas or any other school would be different than what ours are in most cases.
A few years ago, obviously, you got a lot of attention when people saw the video clip of the I'm 40, you know, rant, and certainly got your attention. How much do you think that may have helped you, especially in terms of recruiting-wise, people seeing you?
Huge. And, you know, I mentioned the other day that very seldom do I go anywhere and go into a home where somebody could be a mother or a grandmother or a parent that does not bring it up and say, you know, I really appreciate, you taking a stand. And, you know, that's why I'm really excited about my son coming to school there. That happens still to this day.
Was there any part of you after it happened where you were like, people are making too much of this, and you kind of wince?
Not really, because I think that there's a lot of popularity in college football, and with the media coverage and social networking and everything that's out there, you know, one advantage that we have is as coaches and athletic departments is there's so much interest generated in our game that it provides huge resources for everybody else at the university. And so I think that any time there's a situation like that, it ultimately can only be positive.
Your dance music got you so much attention the other day. What did your family say when they watched that or saw the video?
You know, I have three sons, 15 and 9 and 7. And so they're the first ones that hit me with anything that's come out, because they're, you know, they're obviously into all the networking that goes on out there today. And so they get a kick out of it. In fact, my middle son had a game last week, and they were playing a team that had beat them all the time. And so he told them that if they won, that he would try to match the dance, and they end up beating him, so he had to try to do it, which he attempted. I did not see it, but I doubt that it was as good, in my opinion.
Okay.
Mike, I actually looked up the video. It looks like the I'm a Man, I'm 40 rant, over 2 million hits on YouTube, and the Teach Me How to Gundy was well over 100,000, so certainly getting that exposure. Another person connected with the program that's known for exposure is Boone Pickens. What's your relationship like with him, and kind of how has he helped, I guess, guide the program over the last couple of years?
Well, he got it off the ground, and, you know, for those that have followed Oklahoma State football, other than up till about 5 or 6 years ago, you know, we played in the Big 8 conference for a long, long time, and then have been in the Big 12 now for however long it's been, 15 years. And up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we had the bottom of the barrel in facilities. We were there, and Kansas State and Iowa State were down there with us, and then they built new facilities and had indoors and built a new building. They went ahead of us. And then when Mr. Pickens stepped up and made a huge contribution, and we started to redo the stadium, and then he made another huge donation and allowed us to build a new facility in the end zone, then put us at the top, in the top tier with the other schools in the country. And so he got it off the ground. And unfortunately, whether anybody likes to think that it's true, you cannot win in football at this level without money. You have to have money. You have to have resources to keep coaches. You have to have facilities. You have to have huge recruiting budgets to travel in planes, to get places fast, to evaluate players. And he was able to provide us a lot of money to get us started. And since then, we've just busted season ticket sales every year. We've almost doubled season ticket prices, and we've revenued millions and millions of dollars through television guarantees. And I'm sure that our donations through other supporters of the university have gone through the roof. So he was able to step up and help us, and because of that, gave us a chance.
Mike Gundy joins us on the Free Bruce podcast. Oklahoma State ranked 6th in the country. They'll play Texas this upcoming week. And, Coach, what do you see in the Longhorns? And obviously it's a young team coming off of a loss. How much do you look at that Oklahoma game, or do you go back even further in terms of seeing what this team is made of?
Well, our coaches obviously will study every game tape that Texas has this year. And they got in a tough situation Saturday and had some young players, and it kind of snowballed. And they also played a good football team. I mean, I think that, you know, most people now that debate on, you know, the top 5 or top 10 in the country, that would agree that, you know, between Oklahoma, LSU, and Alabama, you know, those three teams right now are going to be tough for anybody in the country to deal with. So they ran into a very, very good football team, started to snowball on them in some youth, and I would think that that would be one of the areas that that was a concern for them going into the game. But we have to travel down there and play, and our team needs to have a good week of preparation, and we just need to go down and play our game.
Oklahoma State undefeated on the season, two road games coming up. Coach, appreciate you joining us on the podcast, and best of luck this week.
Well, thanks for having me. I'll talk to you again.
Thanks, Coach.